I put the yogurt cup down on the counter and asked sarcastically, "Do you have money to pay for it?" Her response came as a shock to me. From within her suit pocket she retrieved an old $2 bill and set it on the counter. "Don't you have any new money, or is this all you have?" I asked. "Next time you go and see someone you should get some new clothes as well as money so you don't look so out of place." I made the transaction and put the change on the counter so I would not have to touch her. Slowly her hand reached toward the counter to retrieve the change. Her hand was half the width of a normal hand and the fingers were long and skinny, almost like pinchers. The flesh was off-white with a slight pinkish, somewhat transparent tone. I stood in shock as I watched her glide through the crowd with great ease and out onto the street. It seemed like the crowd moved out of her way without a word being spoken. Awakening from my trance-like state of mind, my rational thinking rushed back to me. The woman hadn't uttered a single word. What had just happened? Why had it happened? I wanted the answers but held back a strong urge to run out onto the street after her. Quickly I asked a coworker, "Did you see that?"
"See what?"
she asked.
"My last customer?"
"No, I didn't," she replied. Frantically, I went from person to person asking if they had seen her. One girl said she remembered seeing a very tall, blonde woman but didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. There seemed to be no point in questioning them any further. My immediate conclusion while trying to rationalize the woman's visit was that I had lost my grasp on reality. I told myself that I would never tell anyone about the incident. Perhaps all the talk about aliens had begun to play tricks on my mind. I tried to relax for the rest of my shift but found it difficult to keep my mind off of the woman. Several weeks prior I had been drawn to by Transformation, Whitley Strieber's book, despite the fact that I had no desire to read the book. I normally didn't read books on the subject but something compelled me to make the purchase. The book found a home in the corner of my apartment where it remained until 1 week after the encounter at the yogurt shop. At afternoon I got home feeling extremely tired and had intended on resting. From across the room, Transformation caught my eye. I walked over, picked it up and began to read. After only a couple of chapters I questioned why I was reading the book since nothing in it was of interest to me. Yet for some reason I was unable to put it down. It was not until the early hours of the next morning when I could stay awake no longer that I closed it up and got some rest. From work the next day I hurried home, eager to finish the book. One of the last chapters, Visitors Emerge, brought me to tears. It was then that I realized why I was compelled to read this book. More importantly, I realized that I was not crazy. Visitors Emerge was a detailed account of two separate incidents in which physical contact was made with extraterrestrials. What set these contacts apart were the locations in which they took place. These alien visitations had settings in full view of other people. The aliens seemed to make no clear attempt to hide, and were able to walk among us free of detection by the general population. In both cases in the book the details were strikingly similar to my encounters. In one case the alien description was almost identical to mine, including the beige suit and scarf pulled up over the chin. The alien was seen by the observer simply walking past her with a copy of Transformation in her arms. I cried for some time after reading the book as I realized that for whatever reason, the aliens had made a special visit to see me. Once again I found myself asking, why me? Who am I? Late, 1990. I was preparing myself to tell my father about meeting the aliens. I knew he would be in Vancouver so I contacted him to tell him that I had something important I needed to talk about. He agreed to see me when he next came to the city. We'd never had a close relationship so I knew speaking with him wouldn't be easy. When he finally arrived we set up a meeting on Commercial Drive. We sat in the booth of a cheap restaurant, drinking coffee, and talked for a short time. My father has a strong personality and normally wouldn't allow someone to tell him what to do for any reason. I began to get nervous thinking about how I could explain what happened on with the aliens. Anxiously, I shifted in my seat,
played with a stray piece of paper and looked from my father to the table. Finally, I looked him straight in the eye and said, "I need to tell you about something that happened to me. I need you to listen to my whole story before you start asking me questions. Please wait until I tell you that you can speak before you start talking." Without further comment, to my surprise, he agreed, suspecting that somehow my father had his own experiences with aliens. I thought I had put a small piece of the alien puzzle together. But my suspicions were only speculation. After I told him my story, I knew he would confirm or deny the fact that he knew about them. Shaking, I relayed the story of my abduction on that fall day in 1988. I then sat back and watched him. He didn't stir and he didn't say a word. I was still shaking and felt terrified as I waited for his response. "Why don't you say anything?" I asked. He smiled and said, "You never told me I could speak. My God." I thought, "He does know." "Sorry, yes, you can speak. What do you think?" As long as I live, I will not forget his response. He gently leaned into me and very calmly but sternly said, "And those bastards, why didn't you tell me? The worst they ever were with me was 25 years ago." A lightning bolt shot through my entire body as he confirmed his involvement. He asked again why I didn't tell him sooner. "What good would that have done?" I asked. "Maybe I could have stopped them." "And those bastards. How could you have done that?" "I don't know. But I could have at least tried to stop them." He growled back at me. The only thing I told him that day was about my highway experience, nothing more. Yet that was enough to confirm that he knew all about the aliens. He also confirmed that my memories as a baby of the aliens over my crib were real, although I didn't tell him about them. I was almost 25 years old and yet he had only just shared that they were always around him at that same time. Could it be possible that it wasn't my father they were seeking, but me? Is that why they were around all the time? Another question to add to my already very long list. It was getting late and I needed to go home to get ready for work the next day. We decided to meet the following day and talk some more about the whole experience. And it's time we met at a pub for a drink where I began to tell him about the Russian who asked me to join their psychic program. He looked at me and, smiling, asked, "What did you tell them?" I told them I wasn't interested and never would be. He laughed out loud and said, "And that's good, that's good." As he kept laughing, "Why did you tell them you weren't interested?" "I remembered the story you used to tell us when we are kids about never going with them if they ever approached me. You used to tell me that once you were on the streets of Paris during the war and a man approached you. You said this man asked you to go and work for what you called the Russian psychic army. You used to tell me to never go with them. You would say, 'What do they think I'm stupid? You work for them, you can never leave, they will kill you and they own you. You can't hide. There is nowhere to hide on this planet, they are some of the strongest psychics in the world and they can find you with their minds. They don't need to use a gun to kill you, they do it with their minds. Don't ever go with them. Do you understand?' You told me this story so many times as a child that when the man asked me to work for the Russians, I knew he was serious. All my father did was laugh at this story. 'Like father, like daughter,' he said, and that was the end of our conversation about the Russians. We sat together and talked for a couple of hours. I shared with him that since my encounter my psychic ability had become heightened. He said he wasn't surprised. And then out of the blue he leaned over to me and very aggressively said, 'You are not an alien, do you understand? You are not an alien, you are my daughter and don't you ever forget that. No matter what anyone tells you, you are my daughter.' In that moment I knew I could never share with him everything the aliens told me. His response would be to argue and I couldn't deal with it because I wanted to find out what he knew about them. If he got aggressive, it would be impossible to get any information from him. The conversation was waning and it wasn't long before my father and I parted ways. I didn't know it then, but it would be years before we talked again. The meeting with him left me with even more questions regarding his involvement, but it was also clear he didn't want to get involved. More importantly, it appeared to me that he didn't want me to get involved. My relationship with my father had always been strained. John called me one night later that week and told me he wanted to show me something and hoped we could connect as soon as possible. I knew it must be important for him to want to meet so quickly, so I saw him later that night. On the darkened street outside my boyfriend's apartment, John and I sat on a street bench. He held in his hands an envelope from which he took out a document. He told me he got it from one of the guys he worked with. Although he wanted to share this document with me, he warned me that if they found out he had shown it to me, he could be in a lot of trouble. When I asked him why he was taking such a big risk, he replied that he felt it was important for me to know its contents. The title of the document was Protocol for Extraterrestrial Contact. There was reference to MJ-12 on the cover page. I took the document from him and went back to my boyfriend's place where Frank was waiting for me. We read the package together, barely able to believe our eyes. The information on those pages gave details as to how people who had contact with anything extraterrestrial would be dealt with. Specifically, it said they could be held by the government, isolated for any amount of time the government felt was needed. These people would have no contact with the outside world and would be held in quarantine indefinitely. It went on to mention certain families who were pre-chosen that would be taken to assigned areas in the case of alien contact on a global scale. These families would have military protection from outsiders. There would be housing and supplies in order for them to live. They would be held in these camps in an attempt to save the human race in the event of a threat from extraterrestrials. The document went on and on in this manner. I became afraid after reading the paper, and Frank was clearly shaken as well. What the hell is going on? Frank kept asking me. Sadly, I couldn't answer that question for him, let alone for myself. We wondered why John gave the MJ-12 document to me to read and where he got it. Was he working for some government organization? And that question played constantly in my mind. I spent that night at Frank's apartment and we talked for a long time after reading the document, concerned about the implications for anyone who had extraterrestrial contact. I kept thinking, hush, that's me. Maybe John was concerned for my safety and this was his way of warning me of the danger I may be in. I fell asleep trying to put the pages out of my mind. The next morning Frank had to go to work, so I left with him and went back to my apartment. There I made a few calls to people whom I wanted to show the document. I knew John had asked me not to let anyone see it, but it was so important. I called a local researcher, Ted McDonald, whom I had made contact with through Sandra Jones the previous year. I told him I wanted to see him to ask his opinion on this MJ-12 document. He sounded very excited about it on the telephone and we set up a meeting for later that day. A couple of hours later I was on Robson Street in front of the public library. There I waited for Ted while I sat on a bench watching the tourists pass. The night before it had rained lightly and I was pleasantly surprised that the sun was shining. It didn't take long before Ted arrived and we began talking about the document. He told me he made an appointment to meet with another man as well as me. He said I didn't have to show the other man the document if I didn't feel comfortable, but Ted thought the two of us should meet. As I pulled the papers out of the envelope, I watched those around me. No one cares much about other people's business in the city, but I didn't want to make a scene either. Near the top of the document, "Top Secret" was stamped. Yet I kept thinking that it must be a joke of some kind. Just as Ted began to look at it, he spotted his friend in the distance and jumped up to meet him. As I waited for Ted to return, I saw another man approaching. I recognized immediately that there was something very strange about him. He was dressed in an all-black suit and had black hair. He had dark black sunglasses on, even though the sun was not bright at the time. He walked past me very slowly and, as he passed, turned his head to look directly at me. He kept walking and then turned around to come back. There was a newspaper box in front of me, to the left. When he got in front of it, he leaned over to look inside before turning, then looked directly at me and then back to the headlines. His movements were rigid and calculated, making him seem even more out of place. Most disturbing was that, for some reason, I couldn't feel anything from him. I kept looking at him with his back turned, trying to make sense of the lack of any energy coming from him. Even when I look at a rock, I feel some sort of energy emanating from it, so it was extremely odd to watch this man and feel nothing. People consist of feelings. With this man it was as though he wasn't real, almost as though he was a hologram or an empty shell. After a moment or two the man turned and walked straight over to me and stood directly in front of me, only inches from my knees. It was at that moment I realized, not only was this strange, but he was probably there because of me. He said in a monotone voice, "Do you know where there is any good shopping around here?" What a stupid question, I thought. We were surrounded by the best shopping district in Vancouver. I couldn't feel his presence even though he stood in front of me. If I had my eyes closed, I wouldn't have known he was even there. I have been in a dead sleep when someone came to stand at my doorway and I sat straight up, looking right at them, knowing they were there because I could feel their energy, even in my sleep. And that's how sensitive I am to people's energy. With this man, I felt nothing. I turned the document over so he could see the top secret stamp. I wanted to get his reaction. At that moment Ted sat down beside me. We both watched as the man put his head down to look on my lap and, with no reaction at all, repeated his question. "Do you know where there is any good shopping around here?" Very sarcastically I told the man, "I think you will find what you are looking for right here on Robson Street. All you have to do is turn around to find you are in the middle of the shopping district." He just stood there, not saying a word. Ted and I looked at each other and then I told the strange man, "You should go now, before all the stores close." He stood silently for at least 2 seconds and, without saying another word, he turned and walked away. After he crossed the street dead, his friend and I all shook our heads in disbelief over what just happened. "What did that man say to you?" Ted asked. "He didn't say anything other than what you heard yourself. And it was an mib." As usual, I knew nothing about what he was talking about. He explained to me that MIBs, men in black, were another part of the UFO phenomenon. No one really knows who or what these men are or what their purpose is. Interactions with them are usually brief and odd. They wear all black, often have dark sunglasses and have been known to drive very old black cars. And his information made me nervous and only added to my already long list of strange occurrences around me since my highway encounter. Ted and his friend were very taken aback, not only by the MIB, but also by my MJ-12 document. They thought it must be genuine due to the strange interaction with the man in black. Ted tried to explain to me the little he knew about MJ-12, but his information was limited. All he knew was that MJ-12 was a group of 12 men who apparently had knowledge of the UFOs and were trying to gain control of the phenomenon. MJ-12 is an interesting area in ufology, but my own knowledge is limited. It would be best for the reader to research the topic themselves for further information. They wanted to make copies of the document, but I heeded the words of John and didn't allow them to. If John was nervous about letting me see it and I was indeed just visited by an MIB, then I felt it wouldn't be wise to make any copies. The three of us went for a coffee and discussed the afternoon's events, where I found myself in the hot seat, feeling like I was playing 20 questions and explaining everything I knew about the aliens to the two men. I got tired quickly and decided to say goodbye so I could go home and have John come and pick up the MJ-12 document. I wanted it out of my hands. Late that afternoon I received a call from Frank. He was very upset and clearly concerned. He told me the police had just left his home. Someone had broken into his apartment. Eerily, it seemed to the police that whomever had broken in was clearly looking for something in particular, and that Frank's room was clearly the target of the break-in. His room and all its contents had been rifled through, including those in his closet. The kitchen, living room and his roommate's room were barely touched. The police thought my boyfriend was a drug dealer. There was about $10,000 worth of electric guitars and amps that weren't taken. An ounce of solid gold beside Frank's bed was also left untouched, as was money sitting in plain sight on his dresser. Frank was, understandably, very upset by the break-in. I couldn't blame him as it upset me as well. He kept asking me what the hell I was involved in and why they had targeted him. It seemed obvious to us both that it could have been someone looking for the document. I tried to calm Frank and downplay the events leading up to the break-in, but it didn't help. It wasn't long before Frank told me he didn't want to see me anymore. How could I blame him? Ending the relationship broke my heart. I realized that from that point forward any relationship I did have would more than likely have complications. I always thought of myself as being a strong independent woman before all the alien contact. With all the attention and experiences I was having, I concluded it might be some time before I found someone to share my life with again. End, 1990. By this time I was getting tired of all the craziness. There were so many questions I wanted answered for myself personally. At the same time, I seemed to already have many of those answers. I just needed to process all the information I had in my mind. It was a rather strange predicament to be in. When I talked about my experiences, I often felt as though I was being interrogated. I was happy to share with others my experiences, but they seemed to think I had the answers to everything, and that was simply not the case. One slow Saturday afternoon, my coworker and I sat chatting together. The day was rather cool and wet, and the trickle of customers at the frozen yogurt shop made the minutes seem like hours. When a couple walked into the shop, we both jumped to our feet to help serve them. They walked past my coworker and looked directly at me. They kept eye contact and walked to the far end of the counter. I followed them, asking what I could get for them. After their first response, I knew they were there to see me. Instead of ordering, the man began a strange conversation with me. He introduced himself and reached across the counter to shake my hand. He then introduced the woman with him. She reached across, grabbed my hand and said, "It is an honor and a privilege to finally meet you. What are these people really doing here? What does she mean, finally meet you?" I wondered. During our conversation, I found out they were from California and had apparently taken a last-minute trip to Vancouver for only 2 days. The conversation was strange as it revolved around me. The man asked if I kept a journal. I told him that I did, after which he told me that it would be important to me in the future and possibly for other people as well. Strange comment, I thought. When I asked them about what they did for work, the man told me they built new technologies for a company called Lockheed in California. All I could think as I stood there talking was, why? Why am I so important? Am I imagining all of this? The two finally left, without any yogurt. Years later, I found out that, according to conspiracy theorists, reverse engineering of alien technologies is done at Lockheed Martin in California. As the door closed behind them, my coworker walked over to me. What did those people want? It was really weird, Miriam. It was as if they came in just to talk to you. I tried my best to dispel her worries, but it did no good. She kept talking about them. From her observation, it was as if they had led me to the end of the counter so they could talk to me alone. She said they looked creepy. Everything in my life was like something out of a spy novel or science fiction movie. It was very difficult to handle, and I wasn't sure how much more I could take as the number of bizarre incidents kept growing. I no longer wanted to be involved in the abductee meetings and was beginning to think that maybe I was too high profile. I could feel the real potential for danger to myself, and I wasn't sure what to do about it. I couldn't get the woman's words out of my mind. "It is an honor and a privilege to finally meet you." Who were they? And why did they come to see me? What did they know about me that I didn't? So many questions, and one answer only leads to more questions. Running away. End, 1990. Begin, 1991. I moved to Victoria in an attempt to remove myself from the spotlight. No longer could I tell myself that everything was okay when I knew it wasn't.
Too many strange people popping into my life made my decision to leave Vancouver an easy one. Some of my friends were beginning to feel that I might be in danger as well. Even though I was beginning to think the same thing, I tried to sway their thinking. The last thing I needed was for them to worry about me. I tried to get on with a normal life and keep to myself a little more. After the Russians, MIBs, alien visitations, secret documents and break and enters, I had had enough. It was time to leave and let some rational thinking seep back into my mind. I thought that the fireworks going on around me may calm down if I took a few steps back. I got a job working at a car dealership washing cars. I was happy to have found such mindless work rather quickly. It gave me the opportunity to earn just enough to pay my bills yet not have much interaction with people. After all I had experienced the past 2 years, I was happy to have the quiet time. I went to work one day and began washing the long line of new cars. On the street I saw a white van that was parked with a man sitting in the driver's seat. At first I thought maybe he was waiting to have work done on his van at the garage. As the day went on I began to question what he was doing there. He simply sat, looking straight ahead. Once in a while he would turn his head and look directly at me for a moment and then turn his head to glare straight ahead again. After 4 hours I didn't see him eat or drink anything, nor did he leave the van at any point. The back of the van had blacked out windows which made me feel uncomfortable. By now I was a little paranoid, how could anyone blame me? I tried very hard to think of a rational explanation for his presence but found none. At around 1 in the afternoon I decided to go for lunch as it was a great opportunity to walk past the back of the van as close as I could and possibly see inside. As I passed the back window of the van the sunlight shone just right and I saw the outline of a long telescope camera. As I continued to walk, I became angry. I just wanted to be left alone. I came back from lunch to find the van and the man in the same position where they stayed for the entire day. At 5 in the afternoon I went home and left him there. The following day the same van sat in the same position, but this time the driver was different. How stupid do they think I am? I kept thinking. Later that day, I saw an old black car, like the one my parents had when I was a child, drive by. The driver wore all black, had black hair and wore dark sunglasses. He turned and looked directly at me as he passed by. I remembered what Ted told me about the MIBs and wondered if this was one of them. When he drove by a second time, only a matter of minutes later, he did as he had the last time, slowed the car down and looked directly at me, holding his glare. And this time I smiled and waved at him, while thinking how much it ticked me off that he was there. By this time I was very upset and wondered what was really going on with this van. I moved from Vancouver and stopped almost all contact with UFO people because all I wanted was to be left alone. So I took a deep breath and marched straight over to the man sitting in the driver's seat. I noticed that you have been here all day, can I help you with something? The man was surprised and I could see this on his face. No, thank you, he replied. Can I get you a coffee or something? I noticed you've been sitting here alone all day and you haven't even gone to the washroom. Can I get you anything? Clearly shaken by my actions he said, no, thank you. I am fine. I smiled and told him, if you need anything just wave at me to let me know, I will be watching for you. And then I walked away. After half an hour the van left and I never saw him again. Coincidence? Maybe. I was glad he was gone. A couple of months later my friend Sandra from Vancouver called. When I left Vancouver I had asked her to let me know if she met anyone with a large amount of knowledge on UFOs, as I would be very interested in meeting with them. She had met a man that seemed to be very interested in all areas of ufology. When she met him she had mentioned my story to him and told him a little bit about me. He was apparently very interested in meeting with me. I was trying to keep a low profile but I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to meet with someone who was knowledgeable, so we set up a time the following weekend for a meeting. I told them it would be easier for them to come to Victoria than for me to come to Vancouver. It was mid-morning on a sunny Saturday when they arrived.
The house I was staying in was empty for the day, so we didn't have to be concerned about any interruptions during our meeting. I was excited over the potential of finding another contact that would have knowledge similar to mine. A car pulled into the driveway and I ran downstairs to the side door and went out to greet them. Chandra jumped out of the car and said hello while giving me a hug. The man was still fussing inside the car.